Hello and welcome to Speak the Words of Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where I attempt to explain the story of the Stormlight Archive to Mango. Slowly. We're making our way through it. We're on Oathbringer. We're over halfway through. Probably just about halfway through, to be honest.
A little less than halfway through.
Yeah, okay, well, these are... But we're through the, like... boring parts.
Are we?
Those aren't even the boring parts.
Are we through the boring parts of Mistborn? No.
No, we're not. We're not. But Mistborn's good. You're gonna like Mistborn. We're gonna get to it.
Okay, that doesn't mean there aren't boring parts.
That's true. There's always boring parts.
Unless it's Percy Jackson.
I just read the... In some of those books, there are no boring parts. I just read those books over the summer, and I would... There's definitely a couple boring parts in, like, Sea of Monsters.
Well, okay, yeah, but not nearly that frequently, and they're still, like...
Not in Battle of the Labyrinth. Battle of the Labyrinth is a fucking masterpiece. Anyways, listen to our Percy Jackson podcast, where I just talk about how Battle of the Labyrinth is one of the best, like, middle grade books I've ever read.
Can we?
Anyways, we'll see what happens when the show comes out. What happened last time? Do you remember what happened with Dalinar?
No.
So Dalinar had pretty much Dalinar got denied by all of the different.
Oh yeah, and then he became king of what's the city called?
High King of Urithiru.
Urithiru, yeah.
Yeah, and Elikar is contemplating adding the Shattered Plains to that dominion.
It's like, hey, you're the king of no one except for people who are at war.
Yeah.
Except also kind of not fully at war anymore.
Yeah, the Parshendi are gone, so there's nothing here.
All that's left is war camps with soldiers that are not fighting anything.
Yeah. And also, it wasn't all for naught, Mango, for there is one shining beacon of hope in this world who will always stand by Dalinar Kalin. And his name is King Taravangian of Karbroth and Yakaved. And he wrote saying, yeah, I'll come to Urithiru. He also said that he has a surge binder with him. He has a Knight Radiant. So.
Who?
Yeah. Who?
And also Shallan has DID.
Yes, that was Shallan's chapter. She has DID. And... Pattern said no mating.
Oh yeah, I commented that it was funny that Syl was like encouraging Kaladin, like, hey, you've been kind of sad, maybe you should like have some fun with someone and you know get some. Mm-hmm. And then Shallan teaches Pattern to not let her get some, so
Kaladin surrenders himself to a group of Harshmen. Who he comes upon them and he's like, all right, time to take care of some Voidbringers. And they're just sitting there playing cards. And he's like, this doesn't seem right. Something's wrong here. And a Spren noticed him and alerted the Parshmen to his presence.
Oh, yeah. And then he surrendered.
And he surrendered, yes. And I believe that's pretty much it. This week, we start with chapter 16, titled Wrapped Three Times, and it has Dalinar's symbol. The epigraph reads, "For in this comes the lesson from Oathbringer Preface. A legend rested on the stone slab before Dalinar, a weapon pulled from the ancient mists of time and said to have been forged during the shadow days by the hand of God himself, the blade of the assassin in white, claimed by Kaladin Stormblessed. Upon cursory inspection, it was indistinguishable from an ordinary shard blade. It did have one oddity. There was no gemstone. Gemstones were what allowed men to bond to shard blades. This blade didn't have one. Dalinar hesitantly reached out. It was warm to the touch, like something alive. It doesn't scream when I touch it, he noted. The knights, the Stormfather said in his head, broke their oaths. They abandoned everything they'd sworn, and in so doing killed their Spren. Other blades are the corpses of those Spren, which is why they scream at your touch. This weapon, instead, was made directly from Honor's soul, then given to the heralds. It is also the mark of an oath, but a different type. And does not have the mind to scream on its own. And Shardplate? Dalinar asked. related, but different. You haven't spoken the oaths required to know more. You cannot break oaths, Dalinar said. Right? I cannot. What of the thing we fight? Odium, the origin of the Voidbringers and their spread. Can he break oaths? No. He is far greater than I, but the power of ancient Aedon Alzheim permeates him and controls him. Odium is a force like pressure, gravitation, or the movement of time. These things cannot break their own rules, nor can he. I don't think that's the first time we've said the name Aedon Alzheim. I think it's the second, but it's an important name. The power of Aedon Alzheim permeates in Odium. Odium's power comes from something older.
Is it the planet that they came from?
Raffa.
Like a god from the planet that they came from or something?
Mm-hmm.
The one that Raffa. Like actually created the universe or whatever?
Who knows? I know. Dalinar tapped the Honor Blade, a fragment of Honor's own soul. In a way, the death of their god gave him hope. For if Honor had fallen, surely Odium could as well. In visions, Honor had left Dalinar with a task. Vex Odium. Convince him that he can lose and appoint a champion. He will take that chance instead of risking defeat again, as he has suffered so often. This is the best advice I can give you. I've seen that the enemy is preparing a champion. A dark creature with red eyes and 9 shadows. Will Honor's suggestion work? Can I make Odium agree to a decisive contest between me and that champion? Of course Honor's suggestion would work, the Stormfather said. He spoke it. I mean, why would it work? Why would this Odium ever agree to a contest of champions? It seems too momentous a matter to risk on something so small and inferior as the prowess and will of men. Your enemy is not a man like you. He does not age. He feels. He is angry. But this does not change, and his rage does not cool. Epochs can pass and he will remain the same. To fight directly might coax out forces that could hurt him, as he has been hurt before. Those scars do not heal. To pick a champion, then lose, will only cost him time. He has that in plenitude. He still will not agree easily, but it is possible he will agree. If presented with the option in the right moment, the right way, then he will be bound. And we win. Time, which though dross to him, is the most valuable thing a man can have. Dalinar slipped the Honor Blade off the slab. So, yeah, what essentially the Stormfather is saying there is, like, they can't beat Odium through a contest of champions, but they can lock him into an agreement that buys them more time, which is the most important thing, really. When, you know, Odium won't really care because he's, like, an immortal being that can just, like, you know, it doesn't matter.
Okay,
like,
I'll try again in 100 years.
Yeah, but for humanity, that time to prepare will be useful. Dalinar looks over at a shaft cut into the ground of the room, which they believe belonged to a sewage system. Navani was trying to figure out how the Tower City worked. For now, though, Dalinar hides the Honor Blade inside the shaft and leaves. He could think of nothing safer for it at the moment. What will you do with it? The Stormfather asked. It is a weapon beyond parallel, the gift of a god. With it, you would be a Windrunner unoathed, and more that men do not understand and cannot, like a herald, nearly. All the more reason to think very carefully before using it, though I wouldn't mind if you kept an eye on it for me. The Stormfather actually laughed. You think I can see all things? I kind of assumed. The map we made. I see what is left out in the storms, and that darkly. I am no god, Dalinar Kullin. No more than your shadow on the wall is you. Dalinar begins to descend a staircase and wonders if they could use the Honor Blade to create a Windrunner to get to Thalen City or Aesir, or take Elokar's team to Kolinar if Kaladin didn't return soon. The Stormfather had told him that the Honor Blade could work oath gates. He thought Yurithiru was an odd place to make home, but it wasn't so different from the Shattered Plains. He joined his guards from Bridge 13. Is all well, Bright Lord? One asked. Fine. Good, good. Wouldn't want anything to have happened to you while you were out, alone, in the corridors, when you said nobody should be going out about alone. Dalinar eyed the man. Your name? Rial, the man said. Bridge 13. Well, Sergeant Rial, I was not alone. Where did you get this habit of questioning officers? It isn't a habit if you only do it once, Bright Lord. And you've only ever done it once? To you? To anyone? Well, those don't count, Bright Lord. I'm a new man, reborn in the bridge cruise. Lovely. Well, Rial, do you know what time it is? I have trouble telling in these storming corridors. You could use the clock device Brightness Navani sent you, sir. I think that's what they're for, you know? Dalinar affixed him with another glare. Wasn't questioning you, sir. It wasn't a question, you see. Dalinar finally turned and stalked back down the corridor to his rooms. He found the watch that Navani had made for him. It was a pain rial, a fabrial that would take pain, or it has a pain rial, which is a fabrial that would take pain from him, built in. He put on the watch, then went down to the soldiers' training area. He goes to the swordmasters and asks them if one of them would spar with him. They all refuse and leave to find him another opponent for him. Zahel is the only one that sticks around. Not offended by my presence, Zahel. I'm offended by everyone's presence. You're no more revolting than the rest, Mr. High Prince. Dalinar settled down on a stool to wait. You didn't expect this, Zahel said. No, I thought, well, they're fighting Ardents, swordsmen, soldiers at heart. You're dangerously close to threatening them with the decision, Bright Lord. Choose between God and their High Prince. The fact that they like you doesn't make the decision easier, but more difficult. Their discomfort will pass. My marriage, though it seems dramatic now, will eventually be a mere trivial note in history. Perhaps. You disagree? Every moment in our lives seems trivial, Zahel said. Most are forgotten, while some, equally humble, become the points upon which history pivots, like white on black. White on black? Figure of speech. I don't really care what you did, High Prince. Light-eyed self-indulgence or serious sacrilege. Either way, it doesn't affect me. But there are those who are asking how far you're going to end up straying. I love this, just a little, white on black. Like, his sayings use colors, because that's what the sayings on Nalthus do.
Yep.
They use colors in them.
I picked up on that.
It just, you know, keep that in mind, you know, maybe somebody else at some point will be, using color-based... You'll have to just keep an eye on that. Dalinar left to find somebody to spar with himself, and chooses one of General Kahl's sons. The man agrees, and Dalinar steps into the wrestling ring. Dalinar begins to get overwhelmed by the younger man, and instinctively reaches for the thrill before stopping himself. Once Dalinar is immobilized, he thinks that he could use Stormlight to overpower the other man, but it doesn't seem fair. "Oh, for Storm's sake," a feminine voice said. "Dalinar..." Dalinar's opponent let go immediately, backing away. Dalinar twisted to find Navani standing outside the ring with arms folded. He grinned at her. Come to watch me spar? Yes, what every wife loves, seeing that in his spare time her husband likes to roll around on the floor with half-naked, sweaty men. Dalinar looks around, noticing that the Ardents won't meet his eyes. He sees Kadash speaking with the swordmasters, and the young man that bested him being congratulated by his friends. Dalinar fears that he'd endangered them both by pushing the contest too far. He wonders when he would expect to fight in person again, and remembers the enemy's champion. He'd been expecting to fight the champion himself, but thinks that having Kaladin do it would make more sense. Navani tells him that the Irialli Queen is ready for a meeting, and Dalinar tells her to set up the spanreed here in the training hall. He tosses a sword to Kadash, and tells the man to spar with him while he conducts the meeting. Kadash tries to refuse, but Dalinar orders him to fight. I remember when you first got your blade. The world itself trembled on that day, Dalinar Kalin. Don't be melodramatic. There is merely one in a long line of idiots given the ability to kill people too easily. Dalinar rushed in swinging. Kadash rebuffed him, then stepped to the side of the ring. Pardon, Bright Lord, but you were different from the others. You were much, much better at the killing part. As Dalinar and Kadash clash, the Irialli Queen writes that the world is about to have a great new experience. She says that all experiences are welcome, even the onset of the new storm. Dalinar says that Roshar needs to unite against the Voidbringers. Kadash says that Dalinar is ripping apart his own people, and Dalinar asks why the Almighty is God. Kadash says he is simply is, and Dalinar says that it isn't good enough for him anymore. The Irialli Queen says that the Voidbringers are offering gracious terms, and Dalinar asks if they would side with the Voidbringers. Kadash asks if Dalinar is surprised that somebody would turn away from the Almighty's light and choose darkness, and Dalinar refutes that he isn't a heretic. He says that Honor confessed he was beaten, and Kadash says that the princes of Voidbringers were said to be able to send men lies. The Irialli Queen says that they might be able to prevent another desolation if they let the Voidbringers take what they wish. She also says that they distrust the word of a thief. Dalinar thinks that this is related to Adolin's shard plate, and he continues to duel with Kadash. Kadash implores that the Almighty is not dead, and asks Dalinar to take back his insistence of Honor's death. If he does that, the Ardentia could get behind his marriage to Navani. Dalinar says that they need real hope, not faith in lies. Dalinar tells Kadash the story of his first sword trainer, a man who taught Dalinar to tie his clothing in a very specific way. He had found it to be too tight, and when he asked his master why they did it this way instead of the looser style that most wore, the master said that he had been taught that way. When Dalinar traveled to his master's hometown, he found the man that had trained him. The man said that he had also learned how to tie it from his own master. Finally, Dalinar found his master's master's master, and the man said that he tied it that way because he would trip if he tied it any looser. Dalinar says that just because something is old, that doesn't mean it's right. Navani chimes in, saying the Irrealli Queen believes Dalinar to be a thief and that he shouldn't be trusted. Dalinar offers to come up with a personal reconciliation so that the Kingdom of Rhaera doesn't end up siding with the enemies of all mankind. Kadash attacks Dalinar out of anger, and Dalinar takes him down with an illegal dueling strike. When Kadash calls him out, Dalinar just says that he isn't much of a duelist these days. He says that the world is ending and he can't rely on tradition anymore. He needs proof. Kadash says that Dalinar sounds like his niece, which Dalinar takes as a compliment. Kadash says that the heralds had power which proves the existence of the Almighty. Power, Dalinar said, like this. He sucked in Stormlight. When he rose, he left Kadash stuck to the ground. The Knights Radiant have returned, Dalinar said, and yes, I accept the authority of the heralds. I accept that there was once a being named All Honor, the Almighty. He helped us, and I would welcome his help again. If you can prove to me that Voronism as it currently stands is what the heralds taught, we will speak again. He tossed his sword aside and stepped up to Navani. Nice show, she said softly. That was for the room, not just Kadash, I assume. The soldiers need to know where I stand in relation to the church. What does our queen say? Nothing good. She says you can contact her with arrangements for the return of the stolen goods and she'll consider. Storming woman. She's after Adolin's shard plate. How valid is her claim? Not very. You got that? Not very. You got that through a marriage and to a light eyes from Rhaera, not Eerie. Yes, the Irrealli claim their sister nation as a vassal, but even if the claim weren't disputed, the queen doesn't have any actual relation to Evie or her brother. Dalinar grunted. Rhaera was never strong enough to try to claim the plate back, but if it will bring Eerie to our side, then I'd consider it. Maybe I can agree to. He trailed off. Wait, what did you say? Oh, right, you can't hear her name. Say it again. What? Evie? Memories blossomed in Dalinar's head. He staggered. Navani called for physicians. Evie. He could hear his wife's name. And suddenly, he remembered her face. And that is the end of the chapter.
Hello? Why can he suddenly remember her?
Raffo.
Well, duh. But... What? Is this the same type of thing as what was happening with what's her face? Lyft?
It is interesting that both Lyft and Dalinar's boons seem to be wearing off.
Is that the boon or the curse?
Boon or curse, whatever. I honestly, until we get to that part, I can't remember either. I've only read this book once. And there's a lot at the end. So that part gets...
So Dalinar, we find out at the end Dalinar's of this book. Flash,
you're going to see Dalinar's moment with the Night Watcher.
Okay.
At the end. But to me, it gets kind of overshadowed by everything else that's happening in the ending. So, like, I forget details of that encounter. But, yes, Dalinar remembers Evie's name. I can finally say Evie! I can finally say her name! And
remember her face.
Remember her face. Yes. And memories are blossoming in his head. It's interesting. It's interesting, Mango, that the last flashback the book gave us was right before he would have started to meet her. Because at the end of the last flashback, he's like, fine, I'll consider getting married. So.
And now we're going to get flashbacks of them.
Evie's going to start to show up in the flashbacks, yes.
Nice. It's going to be really sad, isn't it?
Chapter 17, Trapped in Shadows. Kaladin symbol. The epigraph reads, "It is not a lesson I claim to be able to teach. Experience herself is the great teacher, and you must seek her directly." From Oathbringer, Preface. The parchment that captured Kaladin debate whether they should kill him or not. Ken, the woman who had been playing cards, argues strongly in favor. They're worried that Kaladin will take them back to be slaves. As they speak, he notices that they have dark-eyed Alethi names. Eventually, they stop their debate, and Kaladin slept. When he woke, the male that had been playing cards untied his bond so that he could walk as they moved during the night. Kaladin tells the man that he had been right about how to play the game. As they begin to move, Kaladin found a dozen children that had been hidden earlier when he'd arrived. A little girl took the hand of the man that was leading Kaladin. As they walk, Kaladin explains more of how the game works to the man. Kaladin is reminded of one of his attempts at escaping slavery as he travels with the Parshmen. He realizes that they're not evil and are just runaway slaves like he had been. The reminder of how humans see them obsesses the Parshmen, and Kaladin tries to relate to them through his experiences as a slave. "I've spent my entire life living in a fog," the Parshmen yelled at him. "Every day knowing I should say something, do something to stop this. Every night clutching my daughter, wondering why the world seems to move around us in the light, while we are trapped in shadows. They sold her mother. Sold her. Because she had birthed a healthy child, which made her good breeding stock. Do you understand that, human? Do you understand watching your family be torn apart and knowing you should object? Knowing deep in your soul that something is profoundly wrong? Can you note that feeling of being unable to say a single storming word to stop it?" The Parshmen pulled him even closer. "They may have taken your freedom, but they took our minds." The man picked up his daughter and pulled Kaladin along more forcefully now. Syl appeared, and Kaladin tried to talk to her, but she says that she's having to hide because she thinks the Parshmen can see her. She also says there's another Spren around, the one that had revealed him to this Parshmen. She thinks she's fooled the Spren into thinking that she's just a wind Spren. Syl returned later, and Kaladin realizes that the Spren is guiding the Parshmen, which means that it's from Odium, a void Spren. Kaladin asks how the Parshmen are acting so normal after such a long time half asleep. "The Everstorm," Syl said. "Power has filled the holes in their souls, bridging the gaps. They didn't just wake, Kaladin. They've been healed, connection refounded, identity restored. There's more to this than we ever realized. Somehow when you conquered them, you stole their ability to change forms. You literally ripped off a piece of their souls and locked it away." Syl disappeared again as the Void Spren returned, but says she'll stay nearby in case he needs a blade. Kaladin gives the Parshmen advice on how to escape as runaway slaves, and tries to get them to allow him to help them. The Parshmen says that they can't trust him as he'll want them to be caught again. Kaladin says that he isn't, or he finds that he isn't sure that he does. He doesn't understand why these Parshmen hadn't been granted powers like those on the Shattered Plains. Eventually, they stop again, and Kaladin is tied up to a tree. The little girl from earlier comes up to him with some water. "Will they really chase us?" the girl asked. She was nervous. "Why can't they just let us go? Could you go back and tell them? We don't want trouble. We just want to go away." "They'll come," Kaladin said. "I'm sorry. They have a lot of work to do in rebuilding, and they'll want the extra hands. You're a resource they can't simply ignore." "But why? What did we do to them?" "You tried to destroy them." "No, we're nice. We've always been nice. I never hit anyone, even when I was mad." "I didn't mean you specifically. Your ancestors, the people like you from long ago. There was a war, and..." He couldn't explain slavery to her, so she returned to her father. Syl appears, telling him that the Void Spren wanted them to keep marching, but the Parshmen want to make camp. Since the Void Spren isn't watching, he summons Syl as a knife to cut himself free. Syl thinks that he'll want to escape now, but instead he goes up to the Parshmen and shows them how to make a fire with wet wood. And that is where the chapter ends. This little arc for Kaladin that he's on right now is one of my favorites for him in the whole series.
You've said that.
I know, but I just, as we're getting more and more of, like, Parshmen POVs, mm-hmm. or not POVs, but, like, they're actually speaking, and, it's very interesting, because Kaladin is no longer, he's starting to lose his beliefs, which is a big, like, theme between him and Dalinar. Both of them are losing their beliefs in this book.
And Shallan is going crazy.
Yeah, Shallan's just not okay.
And Adolin is trying to avoid being discovered as being a murderer while trying to find the other murderer. And Renarin just kind of knows things.
Yeah, Renarin's just hanging around, being weird, like Renarin does.
Yep.
Chapter 18, the last chapter we're going to cover tonight, is titled Double Vision, and it has Shallan's POV. The epigraph reads, "You cannot have a spice described to you, but must taste it for yourself." From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan became Vale. Stormlight made her face less youthful, more angular. nose pointed, with a small scar on the chin. Her hair rippled from red to a lethy black. Vale tossed aside the hava, which is like the dress that they wear, instead pulling on trousers and a tight shirt, then boots and a long white coat. She finished with only a simple glove on the left hand. There was a simple relief for Shallan's pain. There was an easy way to hide. Vale hadn't suffered as Shallan had. Vale threw a scarf around her neck, then slung a rugged satchel over her shoulder. Hopefully, the conspicuous knife handle sticking out from the top would look natural, even intimidating. Vale asks Pattern how the disguise looks, and he tells her that it's a better lie than Radiant, who Shallan slips in and out of. Vale says she just needs more practice, then she sneaks out of her room through her balcony and re-enters the tower a few floors down. Pattern says that he likes Adolin. He says that humans are grotesque creatures that all must kill and destroy to live, as that is the way of the physical realm. Because of this, he doesn't hate Adolin for wielding a corpse. Vale says that he just likes Adolin because the man tells Radiant to respect the sword. Yes, very, very nice man. Wonderfully smart, too. Why don't you marry him, then? Pattern buzzed. Is that... No, that's not an option. Oh. Shallan asks him about what he said earlier about dying and letting another cryptic bond her. He says that he will do it since she hates him, and she pleads with him not to go, which seems to please Pattern. Vale reaches the breakaway, a vast collection of tents that form a market in the largest cavern in Yurithiru. Merchants from all 10 war camps mixed there. The central well had clean water that didn't seem to run out, no matter how much people drew from it. Vale enters a bar and tries to develop a reputation for herself by drinking the hardest alcohol they have. The drink is too much for her, and she embarrasses herself in front of the bartender and bouncer. She insists on continuing to drink it, however, ordering another one. As she continues drinking, the bouncer sits down next to her and begins to flirt with her. She can't help but think that Adolin could have destroyed the man. She continued to listen to the man as she drank more and more until she ended up resting her head on the table. The bouncer offers to give Shallan a palanquin that he trusts since it's getting late. He says that the place can be dangerous, and she asks him if anybody ever gets stabbed. She asks where so she can stay away, and he tells her that somebody got stabbed at All's Alley the previous night. Shallan stands up to go and ends up on the floor. She sucks in Stormlight to help with the pain, and immediately her drunkenness vanishes. She stood up without the bouncer's help. "Thanks," she said, "but that's exactly the information I need. Barkeep, we settled?" The woman turned, then froze, staring at Shallan, pouring liquid into a cup until it overflowed. Shallan picked up her cup, then turned it and shook the last drop into her mouth. "That's good stuff," she noted. "Thanks for the conversation, Jor." "Stormfather," Jor said from behind her. "Did I just get played for a fool?"
Yeah.
Kind of. Shallan asks Pattern what just happened, and he tells her that Stormlight will heal her of poisons. She asks him why he didn't tell her earlier, and he says that she drank the poison on purpose. She notes that as soon as she got drunk, Vale slipped away. Pattern says that Vale is just a face, but Shallan treats Vale as another woman, one who hadn't went crazy and murdered her own family. Shallan stopped in place. "My brothers. Pattern, I didn't kill them, right?" "What?" he asked. "I talked to Balat over Spanreed, but I had Lightweaving then. Even if I didn't fully know it, I could have fabricated that. Every message from him, my own memories. Shallan, no, they live. Your brothers live. Moraes said he rescued them. They are on their way here. This isn't the lie. Can't you tell?" She adopted Vale again. "Yes, of course I can tell. Shallan, this is... there is something wrong with these lies you place upon yourself. I don't understand it. I just need to go deeper," she whispered. "I can't be Vale only on the surface." Vale reached All's Alley, which was a massive tent tavern. She goes in and orders the strongest drink they have. She downed 3 glasses of it, using Stormlight to heal herself. She asks the bartender about the recent murder, saying that she's hunting the man who killed her little sister. She says that she thinks the same man killed again here. The barkeep tells her that the murderer had been already dealt with and directs Vale to a group of thugs for more details. She walked up to the group and dropped into one of their seats. She asks the group about the murderer and offers to pay them, but they say they aren't for sale. A hand fell on Shallan's shoulder, and she looked up to find an enormous horn-eater man standing behind her. "This," he said, "is my spot." He pulled Vale off the chair, tossing her backward to roll on the ground. She came to a rest, blinking as the large man sat on the chair. Vale growled, then stood up. Shallan disliked confrontation, but Vale loved it. "Well, well," she said. "You say it's your place, but I don't see it marked with your name." The horn-eater stared at her. "Let me show you," she said, removing her knife and placing the point onto the back of her hand, which was pressed against his. "What is this?" he asked. "You put on an act, being tough? I have seen men pretend. Vale rammed the knife down through her hand, through his, and into the tabletop. The horn eater screamed. The man toppled out of his chair as he scrambled away from her. Vale settled down in it again. She took the cloth from her pocket and wrapped it around her bleeding hand. That would obscure the cut when she healed it. "You're crazy," the horn eater said. "You're Anakai crazy." "Oh, wait," Vale said. "Look, I see your mark here, in blood. Urseet. I was wrong. But mine's here, too. Suppose you can sit in my lap if you want." I'll throttle you, said. "Quiet, the woman in the Hava said. He sputtered. "But Betha." "You think," the woman said to Vale, "assaulting my friends is going to make me more likely to talk?" "Honestly, I just wanted the seat back," Vale shrugged. "But if you want me to start hurting people, I suppose I could do that." "You really are crazy," Betha said. "No, I just don't consider your little group a threat. I've tried being nice, and my patience is running thin. It's time to tell me what I want to know before this turns ugly." Betha frowned, then glanced at what Vale had scratched into the tabletop. 3 interlocking diamonds, the symbol of the Ghostbloods. The moment Betha saw the symbol, she gasped softly. We want nothing to do with your type." "Wow," Vale thought. Curiously, though, one of the other women at the table leaned forward, interested. The group tells her that the murderer had been an angry drunk from Sadius's camp who had strangled his wife. They say they weren't surprised by it, and when Vale asked why the murder was strange then, they say that he killed a second woman the same way and left her in the same place as his wife. They say that he screamed the whole time as they were taking him to his execution that he hadn't killed the second one, but none of the group believed him on account of how similar the murders had been. Vale paid the bartender, grabbed the jug of alcohol, and walked off into the night. And that is the end of the chapter, and where we will stop for tonight.
Huh. So this isn't the first time that someone copied a murder.
Well, this would be after what happened with Sadius. This happened... So Sadius was killed, a copycat murder popped up, somebody else killed, and then another copycat murder popped up. So, like, they aren't being killed in the same way as Sadius, but a regular murder will be committed, and then a copycat of that murder pops up, is kind of the trend that is starting to be discovered.
Strange. And it's just a random person afterwards that has nothing to do with them.
Next week, or next, yeah, well, on Monday, next time, we will... Shallan will catch up with some old friends. I love Pattern's, "Hey, you can tell what the lie is, right?" to Shallan, and she's like, "Yeah, sure." Pattern's like, okay, all right. Spren don't have the easiest jobs.
The fact that Shallan can't even really recognize what in her past is truth and what is a lie is very concerning. Because she realizes she might not be doing everything even consciously. And she might even fool herself.
Oh, I'm sure she's fine. Right? It's not like these books are all about, you know, mental illness and struggling with it, right?
John.
Right? That's not what these books are about, right? I really like Shallan's story. I'm excited for us to keep going. But yes, that's everything I've got for you. Kind of, yeah. Evie, we get the Evie reveal and Shallan descending further into madness. And like I said, next time Shallan's gonna meet up with some old friends. For now, though, join our Discord. The link to do that is in the episode description. Follow us on Twitter for now. The episode, the link to our Twitter account @SpeakStormlight is also in the episode description. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @Sean_AFK. Our cover art was made by our good friend Alex @Alex_BigBoy. For whatever reason, any of these links are like, you know, if Twitter ever just randomly dies, just check the description. I'm sure there's a new link in there. For now, I'm 90% certain I said it last time.
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.